open my eyes. This is a conversation with Marinos Kleanthous, an established intellectual property lawyer, an author, and the vice president of the Democratic Alliance Party. Welcome, Marinos.
Hi, Philippos. Many thanks for this invitation and the hospitality in this beautiful studio. Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you here in the show. I admire the diversity of your interests, activities, and involvements in various domains of life and business. And I really look forward to having this conversation with you.
Thank you, Philippos. Let me also say that I also admire your works and your latest book also. I enjoyed it very much. It was very fruitful and useful because I enjoyed very much the practical aspect of the book. So I was also looking forward for this discussion and for this meeting. Thank you.
Let me start this conversational journey by talking about the intellectual property angle of your life, mm-hmm. and ask you if there was a specific moment in time that led you to decide that this is what I want to do. I love intellectual property law. Was there a specific event or coincidence or decision taken that you can share with us?
This is a very interesting question. Because indeed, when I decided to study law, initially when I was a student, I had no idea about intellectual property law. And in practice, I had no idea about what a lawyer in Cyprus has to do. So in order to reply to your question, I have to say that, yes, when I finished my studies and when I started my trainee lawyer in Nicosia, the very first day I went to the court, I was disappointed. And I said, oh my God, this is what I'm going to do in the rest of my life? I don't like it. I have to say that I had no earlier experience dealing with law. I have no relatives or no one in my family was a lawyer. So being a trainee lawyer, the very first day I went to the court and I saw what is happening and I saw all this big mess and all these bureaucratic, battles with fighting with documents and going to protocolitio there to the clerk of the court for stamps. And for me, it was a nightmare. It was a hell. So it was a very hard moment for me to decide, is this profession for me or not? So one day my father said that if I wanted to continue my studies for an LLM, for a master's degree, then the family will support me, and I am very grateful for this. So when I was searching online about the different lessons and modules that I could choose, I saw an about intellectual property lesson and module, which of course then when I started reading about it, I understood that this is not only law, this is also marketing, this is culture, this is economy. And this is why I took this path. And I'm very proud to say that, okay, I'm a lawyer, but I am not a typical lawyer, meaning that I'm not dealing with court cases, I'm only dealing with intellectual property law cases, which means anything related to innovation, to culture, to business and marketing and advertisement. And I'm excited from this decision.
It's funny because we talked before about the importance of temperament and how some people are more creative than others and they are more open to new experiences. And I told you, I believe you are a creative person and you are open to new experiences. Therefore, you are more aligned with the people I call as creative people. And intellectual property is by definition aligned with the field of creativity, innovation, as you said, imagination.
Indeed.
So have you felt this alignment between perhaps your temperament and the domain that you eventually chose in your effort to veer away from the litigation minefield?
Probably, Philippos. You know, also I'm a kind of person that I don't like, I avoid the routine. So the fact that every day I meet new clients or I'm dealing with cases that each case is completely different than another and is directly related to what we consume, the products or the services, what we watch as consumers on the TV for with the advertisements, the commercial advertisements, with new trends and new products, technological related, or any other new products or gadgets that we have. This is something that I enjoy, that a new day, the new client is a new universe for me, which I learn new things and I help them to protect their new ideas. So, yes, you are right. It might be related to my character as well.
So talking about new ideas, the field of intellectual property has to do with the protection of new ideas, new concepts, new products. So essentially, it's an effort to promote the creative endeavors, innovation, and to protect creators from having their ideas stolen or imitated and so on. At what point is an idea or a fleeting thought about something new becomes protectable or subject to protection or able to be protected?
Mm-hmm. Well, we should say that the main principle of intellectual property law states that ideas, as general ideas, cannot be a monopoly. Mm-hmm. So if you have an idea, for example, to write a book or an idea to open a new restaurant or to create a new application, this is a too general idea, so cannot have exclusivity mm-hmm. on this general notion. You begin your rights when you start writing down your first thoughts that I'm going to open a restaurant and the name will be, I don't know, Marino Spot, mm-hmm. and the recipes will be there below and the chairs will only be this color and the design, the interior design will be like this, or the application, the aim of the application that I want to create is this one, and it will be different than the previous applications which are already in the market in these characteristics. So when you have a specific expression of your idea, then you have intellectual property rights. And when we're talking about intellectual property rights, it's a family of rights which protect different subjects. So again, it's an umbrella of different routes how to protect your idea, the expression of your idea. So for example, this gadget, this phone, has a number of different intellectual property rights because of this technology, of its shape, and its name. So when you start and when you have a specific structure, a skeleton of your idea, then you have intellectual property rights that you need to protect. There is a myth, which from my own personal experience, I confirm that it's a myth. The myth is that when you go to the Silicon Valley, everyone is sharing everything with everybody and then discuss everything. Yes, they do that in a way. I went to the Silicon Valley twice to meet the local associates and for business. Yes, it's an open society, which they share a lot. But from the moment that each potential investor, each potential entrepreneur has the specific expression of his idea, believe me, they don't share the details of their expression because they understand the importance and the value of this expression. Because as I said before, this specific expression is the intellectual property rights, is the property that he needs to protect.
So basically we have the separation between conceptualization and expression, or imagination and expression. The mere thinking of an idea is not registrable. So the idea has to be expressed, has to be made specific in content and form perhaps, so as to have something specific to protect. Is it how it goes?
Exactly. If there is an idea which is not in Cyprus yet, and you say, oh, I have this idea, I want to bring this. For example, let's say there is a new car in the United States, which is not in Cyprus yet. And you say, I want to bring this new car in Cyprus. Do I have any rights? No, you don't have any intellectual property rights because the car is already in the market. Okay, it might not have any registrations yet in Cyprus, but intellectual property rights is the owner is somebody else. But if you have a specific, unique expression of your idea to create something new, then you have specific rights in this specific skeleton, this specific expression of your idea, regardless of the fact that somebody else might be inspired by this and he can create something which, if it's new, from scratch, then he also has his own intellectual property rights. Let me say, there is Starbucks, let me say, and Costa Coffee, right? They both serve coffee, but the expression of each business is completely different. So the consumer can understand the differences between Starbucks and Costa Coffee. They understand the different trademarks. They can understand that if they want this specific latte, they go to this place. If they want something different, they go to others. The idea is the same, right? They both sell coffee, but the whole expression is different.
So expression can be found in things like branding. So the branding of an idea can help protect the idea.
Mainly, yes, branding is one of the elements.
What else?
For technological gadgets is the even the software. We have Facebook and we have Kontakt. In Russia or Ukraine, I think it's very popular, Kontakt as well, which they have many similarities. The idea, it might be the same, that you add your personal details, your photo, you have friends, you upload videos from YouTube or from, I don't know, you just share experiences with your friends. Even they might have some similarities even on the screen, but the software behind Facebook and Kontakt is different. So branding there helps because it differentiates the name. It's Facebook and Kontakt. But of course, on the background and on the basis is the different software, how they were developed.
So the more diverse and distinct the branding is in the expression field, the more you can argue that you are not trying to copy the other person's or company's brand or idea.
Exactly. And the capitalistic system mainly encourages competition.
Correct.
So it's good for the market to be inspired by something that you already liked and to try to create something which is better or something which is cheaper or something which has some other values or some other qualifications as well. So Mercedes and BMW, they are both cars, but they have different patents behind, you know, which they use different patents. So they were inspired and they are inspired by each other. They are motivated by each other. But their secret is that they try to do something better or something which is cheaper or something with different characteristics, but with the same idea. Their expression is different. That's the beauty of intellectual property law.
I was reading recently about a musical development I want to share and to ask you a question. So when we talk about the thin line between inspiration and imitation, okay, so inspiration is promoted in the field of capitalism, competition for the flourishing of the economy and of creativity. So this is inspiration. But at some point there is a line that when you cross it, you imitate. And when you imitate, at least in part, you may fall under the auspices of the IP violation discussion. So I was reading about the Stairway to Heaven song by Led Zeppelin. I don't know if you know the story. I was reading today morning about it. There was a lawsuit against Led Zeppelin by the successors of the band Spirit. Spirit was a band that was writing mainly instrumental songs. And in 1968, they wrote a song called Taurus, Davros. And the beginning of the Taurus song is strikingly similar to the beginning of the, you know, this iconic beginning of the Stairway to Heaven. It goes da 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 da, this cadence of melodies. And there was a lawsuit. And it was a battle for many years. And 3 years ago, the final decision was issued on the appeal by Led Zeppelin, and they won despite the similarity in the beginning of the two songs, Taurus and Stairway to Heaven. They won because the cadence, that melody in the beginning, that arpeggio, was considered to be quite common in the musical composition world. So it wasn't enough for the plaintiffs to succeed in arguing that it was imitation. They said that it was inspired by this. They admitted that they were inspired by that beginning, but it wasn't qualifying as an imitation. And they won. Led Zeppelin won 3 years ago, actually.
That's confirms the beauty of intellectual property law, which, because as we said, inspiration is not only permitted, it's encouraged.
Mm.
It's good. That's why patents, you know, it's all, everything is published.
Mm.
So everyone who wants to see how this patent works, he has the right. He has the, not only the right, it's free to visit, for example, the EPO website,
mm-hmm.
find the patent and see all the details, how that works. But on the other hand, he knows that he cannot use this information until the patent lapses, the protection of the patent lapses. So on the one hand, you have the right of the society and of the scientific world to know how a new discovery, how a new patent works. So this knowledge belongs to the whole world,
mm-hmm.
but for a certain period of time, the economic benefits of this discovery belongs only to the owner who paid for this discovery, for this research, for this and for the whole innovation, and he wants to have the economic benefits from his discovery. So this is the balance.
So it's a merger of two worlds as well. On the one hand, you have the individualistic drive of capitalism, if we place an ideological mm-hmm. filter, which is you allow the individual creator to benefit financially from the creation, but at the same time, you want to compensate the excessive exploitation by the individual by offering a deadline after which the community gets to sort of benefit as well. It's a balancing act, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. How? Yes, exactly. Yes. For the good of the economy, yes. And of the society in general.
The communal good.
Because one of the most ancient trademarks of the world mm-hmm. is Cypriot. And it
really?
Can be found in the at the British Museum. They found many boxes
mm-hmm.
Made from, you know, from...
wood?
Not from wood. From the ground.
Plithari,
yes.
Okay, this
yes.
Mat,
sorry.
Matty substance with wheat and...
Yes, and they had octopus on it, on them. Many. So they said that the producer of these mm-hmm. Specific goods, he wanted to put the octopus on these objects in order to differentiate from his competitors. So it seems that during these ancient times, he had a good name, a good reputation, that, oh, the good, the olives or the olive oil, or I don't know, these products from this specific manufacturer are the best. So octopus is the sign of this producer. And now at the British Museum, at the Cyprus Collection, there are some such exhibits, which, and even at the EU IPO, they have this nice picture on it, which is a confirmation that trademarks is also good, not only for the economy, but also for the communal good, as you said. If you want to buy a specific product, you have a way to understand which is exactly what you want to buy and what not to buy, not to choose.
I saw an interview of you talking about the famous Friends case. So just to make a very quick summary, I'm referring to the Friends series, the blockbuster Friends series. And I am aware that you dealt with a case which relates in part to the series, having to do with a bar in Paphos that was named Friends.
A bar in
Ayia Napa.
In Paralimni area. Yes. Okay.
Can you share your experience there?
Which, of course, I was the bad guy because my client, maybe he was accused to be the bad guy. But at the end, he won. We won. And why we won? Because...
The allegation, sorry for interrupting you, was that there was a passing...
The illegal use of the Friends trademark.
Okay.
Which our client, basically during the 1990s, he registered a pub containing the Friends trademark. Mm. And this was a case that took a lot of, lengthy procedures and a lot of issues. But we won because we managed to prove to the court that at the time that the client registered his trademark, Friends was not popular in Cyprus. It was not even on the TV because the client, it seems that he initially liked French trademark when it started in the United States, well before becoming this well-known series. And so it's crucial to know the time when we won exactly on this detail, that when he filed the application, Friends was not a popular show. So the motives of the client was not, you know, he had no bad faith. So that this is how we managed to fully protect our mark through a clever procedure. Because at one point, the client wanted to protect his trademark not only in Cyprus, but in the EU. So the big US studio came, and we had a number of issues and discussion. But yes, this was one of the cases that we are proud to say that we represented.
So at what point did the bar in Ayia Napa come under the radar of the Friends franchise? Was it at the point where you went to register the
in the
name?
EU? In the EU, no. It was already protected in Cyprus, and he wanted to protect that mark in the EU. So the US studio, they said that they wanted to cancel the Cyprus trademark registration as well. So we had many discussions, and you know, then the US lawyers, the IP lawyers, who are very friendly, believe me, they are very to go out for a coffee with them is very, you enjoy their company, but as US lawyers, they are very aggressive dealing with their issues. And okay, that's good, that's in their culture. But at the end, we managed to have the control of our mark in Cyprus because we were in good faith. Because, as I said, when the client registered his trademark, it was when the show was just started in the United States as well. So
I like the phrase that the lawyers of Friends were friendly. So did the fact that we are talking about a bar and not another series on the TV play any importance, or is not a relevant consideration?
Well, for trademarks, yes. This is one of the issues that is crucial.
The industry.
The so-called classification system, because its trademark has to protect specific goods or services. Mm-hmm. So yes, that was one of the factors. But again, as you know, the big US trademarks, and not only US, international brands, they aim to protect their mark, not only directly for the goods or services that they are well known, but even for any other goods or services, because they don't want their trademark to be used for any other purposes. So we know that Mercedes, for example, is protected for chocolates as well.
Wow.
Or, yes. Or Apple is protected for restaurants or hotels. This is their, you know, they have the ability, they have the money, they have the funds, so they want to protect their brands even for goods or services which are not, they don't use, or they are not well known yet.
They also sell merchandise, so they want to have, I suppose, their channels open in many diverse directions.
Sure.
What about this ChatGPT? Mm-hmm. Chapter that is now taking the world by storm, which is now offering the possibility to create texts, blogs, articles by prompts, and even images. And a few days ago, I saw on the internet,
videos.
Yes, the Sora. Now you can create a video based on a prompt from ChatGPT. How is the IP world receiving this new technology,
which is going to be even more and more dramatically developed, and which affect, of course, not only IP but our everyday life? Well, firstly, let me say that I read the true story of a US lawyer who asked ChatGPT for assistance to defend a case. And ChatGPT prepared a very nice reply, but the references were completely wrong, or you know, they made up.
Delusional,
yes. And he added this information because he didn't check the details. He added information, and the judge said, "What is wrong with this?" And he had a number of issues. So, yes, what I want to say is that yes, this technology is useful, and of course, will change our life, and will make things be developed faster. But on the other hand, yes, we need to be very careful how to use it. So, about IP now. At the moment, because the landscape is keep moving, mm-hmm. and we don't have a clear pathway, and we cannot speak 100% certainty about these issues. But it seems that, yes, the content from the majority of these databases is free to be used. Mm-hmm. But that means that if somebody else, for example, if you want to create a nice logo, mm-hmm. and the AI machine creates this logo for you and you use it for free, that doesn't mean that you have the monopoly of this mm-hmm. logo, because if I also ask my own AI machine to create a similar logo for a similar service, and we have a logo which are, you know, they are just slightly different, mm-hmm. but confusingly similar, then you cannot ask, you cannot go back to your AI machine and ask for, you know, for a refund, or I don't know, for, you know, because it created something which is not unique. So you need to be careful mm. how to use all these very useful tools. That's my initial approach on the issue. But of course, I understand, Philippos, that in the very near future, all these AI tools will be developed much faster. So we're going to have even much stronger and safer content to use for even for litigation issues.
Is it even possible to identify who is the person conceiving and expressing an idea that comes out of this ChatGPT or BART or whatever models? Or is it a relevant question as to whom can we allocate the creative idea or this creative idea or this innovative idea? So we can do it, we can say it's ChatGPT. Is OpenAI, which is a company behind GPT, is the person who is inputting the prompt, the person who is the person that owns the conceptual idea? Are these relevant questions?
These are very relevant questions, and there are many other relevant questions which are related to the ChatGPT. We know that there are some authors who now they claim that the content of their journals is used by the ChatGPT without their consent. So we see that all these discussions and all these questions will be, are now under discussion because of this technology. My understanding is that the responsible body for the content is the company which created the machine to know with the algorithms how to reply to each question. Of course, the replies and the content is free to be used, or I don't know, with a minus, very minimal cost to be used. But that doesn't mean that the copyright belongs to the person who paid for the license to use the content. Now, how this content is created, again, is an issue, because if as we said before, if the AI machine learned to use the online other resources which are there, it doesn't mean that if it's online, it's free or to be used, right? If I write an article and I publish it on my blog, doesn't mean that I give my consent for any ChatGPT machine to use my content for its own purposes. And then for its own economic benefit as well. So all these are issues that in the very next months or years will become even hotter, and we will need to have a specific clear reply, because technology will be will invade science and politics and all professions anyway.
And in this case, technology wears the sprinter's shoes, to use sports terms, but the law wears the marathon shoes. So it has to catch up, and it's very difficult for the law to and the regulation to catch up with the highly disruptive pace of especially the AI law, the AI tech.
You're right, Philippos. And we need to find this. The replies to these questions cannot be addressed nationally. We need maybe an international body to deal with all these issues, not only at the European-only level. Maybe we need something more global.
So it's a matter of global policy, perhaps. Talking about policy, I would like to transition into another domain completely and ask you what prompted you to get into the political sphere. Was there something specific that you... Was it a eureka moment for you? Was it a decision to contribute to the common good? Was there a specific point in time that you remember that you took the decision to get involved with politics? Was it a proposition for to run as a candidate in elections? What was the point that led you to get involved in politics?
Lack of knowledge of the danger. Okay, no, let me say that I always wanted to be part of the solutions of the everyday problems of our life.
Mm.
And I was born, my family is not from the occupied areas of Cyprus. I'm not a refugee.
Mm-hmm.
But I always remember our family talking about the Cyprus problem. I belong maybe to the last generations that we were born with the Cyprus problem on the table every day, discussing the issues of what is happening. And I'm from Nicosia, which of course you see the signs of the separation,
division,
and the division every day. So when I finished and I completed my studies, a friend introduced me to Marios Karoyan, who is a politician, and he was then the president of DIKO. And he told me, I see that you are a very active person and that you have a very nice blog. I used to be a blogger, which I wrote very often my opinions with my arguments within a nice way, with not aggressive or, you know, toxic way. And he introduced me to Marios, and I met Marios Karoyan, and we are friends since then.
Mm-hmm.
He encouraged me to join politics, join the party, because he said, and he's right, that the young generation should be much more participating in politics in a creative way. And since then, I am, as you said, I am into politics. I am member of the City Council of Aglanja. Now since 2011, during the next months will complete my career as a member of the City Council. I think that we all need to have the opportunity to try to change what we don't like in our country, even joining a political party, or even writing arguments, or even doing what now you are doing, Filippos. I mean, this discussion, to discuss about issues that we both have, about our future, about problems. This is something good. And democracy, especially during these days, needs more involvement rather than just having, you know, a toxic opinion about something and full stop. We need to start thinking about ourselves, about our country, and about our future. And when I became father 7 years ago, I understood more the importance of being part of the change that we want for our country. And hopefully, I want to be really the generation that will be much better than the generation that until today were involved in politics, and the generation that will change for the better Cyprus.
Are there real ideological differences similar to the ones, let's say, in the U.S. in Cyprus? So I like to use the U.S. as an example, because there you have, to the extent that I follow and I study, you have, let's say, the Democrats and the Republicans, for example. You have the, which are mapped onto the conservative and the progressive sort of axis. What's the landscape in Cyprus? Do we have a clear ideological split between the main players in the political
right and left and center?
Yes. Is there a genuine split? Can we map the parties on these categories?
I think that Cyprus follows the same route with the other European Union, and not only the other countries generally, which it seems that after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there is a lack of true discussion about political and ideological issues. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the differences between right and left were minimized.
Mm-hmm.
And even after the development of the technological, you know, gadgets and the technology generally, made this gap to be even smaller.
Mm.
So we used to have differences on ideology. Then we move on to have differences on ideas.
Mm.
And now, due to the social media, we have differences because of persons. So now we choose persons. We used to choose ideas and we used to choose ideologies. And now we choose persons. The individual is back again. And I believe that the ideological differences will return in the discussion of politics when we see again, when we see the rise of Asia, and I mean the rise of China, which of course is already there, it's already on the ground, but now it's not as a priority, it's a priority, but in the political discussion is not the number one discussion between West and Asia, this rise of China, which we will see in the very next, in the very few years, which China will be the new Soviet Union in the discussion between West, the Western society and the remaining world. So yes, now in Cyprus, we don't have the political parties don't have the differences that used to have. There is a big confusion. Not only Cyprus, of course, but in the other countries of the Western world, at least. But the discussion will be back again on track when we will see a new superpower to challenge the superiority of the United States. That's my opinion. And so now, in order to conclude that, now we face the era of the personalities who run the political spectrum, not only Cyprus, but in the world generally, of the Western world at least.
So the personalities today are not so much the ambassadors of specific worldviews, but they are like candidates which are voted or selected or discarded based on their charisma, perhaps, and based on their personal...
Their image.
So it's image-centric,
is number one, yes.
Image-centric and not ideology or idea-centric.
They have an ideological maybe background, but the main criteria is the image.
The individual image.
Characteristics, yes.
So China is basically emerging as a new pole, as you said, opposite the West, like to replace the old Soviet Union. So, and that may possibly lead to the reemergence of a Cold War style of...
of a competition, let's
competition,
say.
I guess.
Yes, which I think, from my own experience and knowledge, that China doesn't want to be the new Soviet Union, doesn't want to have this role of the new, you know, the new center of Asia against the United States, but United States... is dealing with China and is gives this characteristic to China. Is afraid. So we are going to see this. We already have this competition. We understand that there is this competition. Even in the politics in the United States, we read about the aggressiveness. They call the aggressiveness of China in Taiwan or in other jurisdictions. So we understand that China is a hot topic in the United States now, but the more China is developing its technology and the more China is entering the African countries and maybe the European countries through their gadgets and their technological tools, we will see that this competition will be hotter and hotter because of the US rhetoric.
Is the Cyprus problem intractable? Or to flip it, is it solvable?
I think it's solvable, but we need to change the method to solve it.
Which is the process?
The process, yes, Philippos. There is a lack of confidence between us. Okay, now you give me the pleasure to share with you my opinion about the Cyprus problem. Let me first say that I want a solution in the Cyprus problem. I don't want the division to continue because the division and the separation will bring more problems to the younger generation. So we need to find a solution with the Turkish Cyprus and with the Turkey, of course. So the current situation is unstable. We cannot continue under these conditions. Now, how can we solve it? Well, until today, we had the same formula and we repeated the same method. And it seems that this method doesn't work. What was the method? We had a United Nations representative who was dealing with between the Greek Cypriot and the Turkish Cypriot leader, and they tried to find a common language, and then let's go to Kramontana or I don't know to Geneva to discuss about the Cyprus problem and see. And when we reach this critical, crucial moment, one side said, oh, I don't trust you. I think I need to go back to see what are going to happen. Or this, the document is not, I have some issues and I want to go back and blah, blah, blah. That means that there is a lack of confidence between the two communities. And this is something that during the last 20 years, even the United, the General of the United Nations is keep telling us that you need to do something about this confidence. So I believe that what we have to do is to adapt the evolving approach about how to solve the Cyprus problem, which is something which is not my idea. I read about it. For example, Christos Yangou is one ex-member of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs who suggested this. And I think Polis Polyviou also wrote a book about it with a different content. And the logic is that if we know in advance that certain steps will be taken in the road for the solution, that if I know that in 6 months Varosha will return to the Greek Cypriots and our side is ready also in 6 months to do something to the other community as well, and if we know, for example, that in 1 year Ankara Protocol will be enforced, which means that the ships and the aeroplanes of the Republic of Cyprus will be able to go to the to Turkey, and we are ready also to open the discussion about the EU Turkey, the negotiations. So if we have a clear pathway with specific dates, that if we do that, you do that. We do that, you do that. And at the end, after 2-3 years' time, we see that everything was implemented. If everything was implemented, to see what's left to discuss about the Cyprus problem, let's do it. That will be much better. Because in the meantime, everything, the confidence will be already there. We will see that the other side did what they had to do. We also did what they had to do. And we will have the option. Shall we proceed with solving the problem or shall we stop the discussion and then to have any other kind, which of course we don't want to have this separation, to de jure recognize what is happening there. But let's see how we can achieve this discussion built on confidence and to understand that we have a lot of things to earn if we are together. If we don't do that, then one day this situation, which is de facto, will be there for another 100 years, and we will continue talking about the Cyprus problem without any possibilities for the younger generations. And we will even lose the opportunity to gain something from the other side. I hope that I was, you know, in the 2-3 minutes, I had the chance to share with you my opinion.
I'm reflecting on what you said. And it's crucial, as you said, for the new generation and new people to get involved and to manage to overcome this perception that politics in Cyprus are tainted by corruption, which of course in part they are. So it's very difficult, I believe, to get young people to be engaged actively with politics, and it's very good that people like you are in the arena.
2 weeks ago, I was in a very interesting presentation of Takis Hatzigiorgiou, who was the ex-member of the European Parliament from AGEL. And he suggested that we need to go to the United Nations and ask for an international body of the United Nations to use Cyprus as its base. There are so many international organizations internationally, either by the EU or by NATO or by other organizations, which don't have their bases in the Mediterranean. So let's go there to the United Nations and ask for such body to be in Cyprus if we find a solution. And this proposal was accepted and was, we supported it not only from AGEL, but from DC, from DICO, from DIPA, from EDEC. I mean, from the Green Party. What I mean is that this kind of proposals are useful, and they can be used as tools to encourage the Greek Cypriot and the Turkish Cypriot community to sit down and think how many things we can earn, how can benefit our island if we find a proper solution.
A key challenge is the idea that the Cyprus problem is can be both used as a common goal for the alignment of all parties to work in tandem, in unison, but at the same time, because most of the Cypriot parties and the identity of the parties is aligned with specific positions linked to the Cyprus problem. This perhaps also makes it difficult for some parties to take decisions which go against their rhetoric. So the Cyprus problem is at the same time the goal that can unite everyone, but also the obstacle which impedes the alignment because of the fact that it is used by some of the parties as the core of their rhetoric. Is it a valid proposition?
Yeah, right, Filippos.
So it's a blessing and a curse.
We need to, we need to accept that the political parties during the 50 years of the existence of the Cyprus problem were not honest.
Mm.
They said nice words about the Cyprus problem. They said lies about the what we can achieve, lies about our history as well, about how we ended up, not only to 74, but even to the UN umbrella, the UN proposed solution. And now that is why the society is confused for the Cyprus problem as well. And some parties continue talking with the rhetoric of the past about our rights and about our demands and about the enemy and about what we can do.
As an expression also of audience capture and in fear of alienating their voters.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep the same rhetoric with some changes in fear that if they change the rhetoric, they change the identity of the party, perhaps. That's the fear in part. If you are a nationalist party,
yes, you are right.
You have the allergy of embracing policies which are more open to, let's say, immigration. Or if you are a progressive party, you have an allergy in, let's say, approving wise decision for curbing, let's say, immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there are also these allergies in moving away from the core of the rhetoric. And moving away from the political discussion and into a lighter kind of conversation, how was the experience as being a chaser in the Chaser game TV show that was very popular? I want to ask you about your experience first, and secondly about the associated topic of learning, because to be a chaser, you can give us a few words to remind the viewers what was the game about, or I can do it. And then the associated question is about how can someone become so well informed, educated, and well around as a person and personality so as to be able to perform such a role. So the first question is the experience on the game.
Yes.
And the second question has to do with how can someone become so well informed and educated to be able to perform such a role?
Well, back in 2020, when it was the first COVID lockdown, Tassos Trifonos, who is a well-known Greek Cypriot presenter, in Greece and Cyprus is popular as well, he called me and he said that I have this idea, I wanted to discuss with you about this new show, which is The Chase, which is a game based on, you know,
knowledge.
The players play against a chaser. There are four chasers.
Mm-hmm.
The chasers have they are persons with a good reputation of, they have deep knowledge of many things, let's say. So that's the uniqueness of this game. So for me, as I said, discussing about the politics, you asked me why I was involved. I told you lack of knowledge of the danger. So with the same approach, I said yes to Tassos because it was the lockdown. We all wanted a change. I had also a card from the TV channel that I can drive at any time I want. So okay, let's go for it. However, when we had the very first meeting with the Alpha TV team and they show us exactly what is this show, and they show us the English version of the show, I was panicked. And I said, this is not for me. I cannot be a chaser, sorry. So it was a big shock because being there, having all these questions to reply, even at the end, more specifically, where you only have 2 minutes, and so many different questions from sports to culture to history to geography to science. So for me, it was something which my first approach was, I cannot do that. And you know, Cyprus is a small island, so the society, you don't know how the locals will perceive this show. They will say, oh, you say you are a chaser, you didn't know that, or this was an easy question, or...
And or being staged, a lawyer, or it's staged.
Exactly. That was one other concern. So being a lawyer and in politics, be exposed in this under these circumstances in a TV show, which is so demanding, for me it was a big challenge. But anyway, I said yes. It was for 3 years. We enjoyed it very much. I think the viewers also enjoyed it very much, because it's my understanding that the rankings were very good. Mm-hmm. Of course, during the very first weeks and months, I was at the beginning of the show a little bit stressed because of the concerns that I told you before. Now, how you are becoming a chaser, I don't know. For me, it was easy for some parts of the game. Mm. I mean, for the questions related to history, to politics, to geography, and for sports, but... not so much for the United, for the NBA, for example, or for the Olympic Games. I had to read a lot, or for cinema, Nobel Prizes. All these areas were very gray for me. I had to study. But as a starting point, I would say that the fact that I was reading Greek newspapers every Sunday when I was a student, I remember that was an advice I received from a good friend, or a family friend, who told me, if you want to study law, I advise you every Sunday to buy the Greek newspapers. To Avima, Kathimerini, Eleftherotypia. These used to be the most popular Sunday newspapers of Greece. So reading these newspapers with this nice Greek language, with all these different topics, from politics to geography to history, for me was something which I used for the game, but even I use today for a number of issues. I mean, speaking nice Greek with all these Greek words, knowing all these details, which I like. I mean, it was like a hobby. It was not something which I was not tired reading the newspaper or these articles about biographies about Mandela, so this is how I became a chaser, reading newspaper, basically.
So Tasos Trifonos chased you.
Yes.
Into becoming a chaser. And this allegation that the chasers are prompted, are given notes, and these things are completely, I suppose, myths, right? That they are told, they are guided, they are Philippos, helped.
There is, during the 3 years of the show, we had many surprises from the studio who has the rights of the game. They are based in the UK, I think. So they came with no notice to check that everything is okay. There is a software with the questions of the show, which, as you understand, it's thousands of questions. And even during the shooting, when there was a mistake, you cannot go back to repeat the question. So you have to go to the next question if something was wrong, I mean, with the cameras, these technical problems. So, I mean, everything is so
random,
random and controlled, which at the same time, which you cannot have access in advance to the questions. Believe me. I would prefer to have, of course, nobody will say, but it was so stressful for me. When I was at the end of each shooting, which we had 3 shows to shoot every week, I remember I used to go home and I wanted to drink, a whiskey to relax from the stress of this experience, because it was a big challenge every show, and specifically when we had good players with knowledge, it was demanding. Of course, we enjoyed it on the one hand, but on the other hand, it was stressful.
So it's the fear of humiliation, isn't it? At the bottom of the fear and the stress. What if I mess it up? What if I say something stupid?
Philippos, I remember I lost from a team which had no idea about history. They had no idea about history, but at the crucial moment, they had a question about Kardashian, which of course I don't follow Kardashian, so I didn't know that. I don't remember even the question. It was about Kardashian, and they won.
Okay.
So, okay, this is the surprises of the show. I mean, nobody will say, oh, you are a chaser and you didn't know about Kardashian. I'm okay, sorry.
So it's genuinely about knowledge and learning and loving knowledge and learning. And I mean, knowing you with your diverse exposure in so many different fields, you exemplify, I think, the type of person that should be going to such shows.
Mm-hmm.
And now we moving to the last part of the podcast, mm-hmm. being respectful also of your time and the time of the studio. Can you share with us three books that you have found profoundly useful and inspirational in the either in the personal or professional development field, or the so-called self-help books, or in any domain that you want to share with us, like three top books?
I try to read a lot, to be honest with you. And luckily, because I am the one who during afternoon times, I take the kids to the afternoon activities.
Mm.
So I have time waiting at the car, reading books, or at the cafe near the places. So my advice, if I may say something to the viewers to the listeners, is that it's good to try to read as many books as possible with different topics.
Mm.
Now, generally, I will say that during the last years, I read three books which helped me a lot about understanding the world and my profession and the challenges of the future. Of course, I will say Harari, the 21 lessons of the 21st century. I read all Harari's books. They even have a nice he has a nice cartoon book, but my kids are too small to read it. But I already obtained it. So Harari's books are useful, especially the 21 lessons of the 21st century. I will say the coming wave of I don't remember the writer, which is about AI and the industries of the future, which again, I forget the name of the authors, but the industries of the future it's a little bit old book, it's a 10 years old book, but it was written by an advisor of Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. And he explained the differences between Estonia and the other ex-Soviet Union countries, why Estonia developed so much technology in comparison to other countries. Because Estonia followed technology, internet, instead of following the same Soviet Union, bureaucratic way of the other countries which were independent. And the coming wave is something which is I enjoyed very much. During the last months, I also enjoyed your book, and I don't say that because you are here. The Marvel of Happiness, it was for me very useful because it was practical. I don't like reading just general books about how beautiful life is if you wake up and you think about life and such. That might work if you are under your holidays and you want to read something, if you want to read something just to spend your time and you cannot be concentrated. But it's also good to have practical advices. And this is something which I remember well, I told you about that. This is something which you don't find easily to many self-development books. I recommended this to the listeners to read that. Actually, three books.
Harari's books are like three. He wrote three or four.
It's the Homo Deus, Homo Sapiens, and 21 Century, and the comic ones.
The comic. I think he's coming out with a new one now, Harari. Very good. What's the worst piece of advice you ever received?
Difficult question. I will say be yourself is complicated. Be yourself on the one hand means that it's good to be original. It's good not to pretend. If you want to do something, do it. If you don't want to do something, don't do it. But there is a danger. You don't adapt to the new circumstances because you are just yourself. So be yourself is good if you read it in one way, but it's also harmful if you don't understand that you can be yourself, but at the same time, you need to follow what's happening around you. You have to develop your skills to try to follow what is happening around you and even challenge yourself.
So words are, words create worlds, they say. So it depends on the filters and how you construe the advice. Be yourself, and I can construe it differently from you. Like, be yourself. And the best piece of advice you ever received? That's the final question.
Okay. Oh, then I will repeat what I said earlier. Reading newspapers. But yes, reading, especially now during this time of so many information and content around us, is important to read specific journals, books, or newspapers that can they are written with you know, with effort by experts about many different topics. It's important to, in order to have an opinion about something or to know what is happening, to read books, newspapers, or journals.
So to have a diverse exposure in different domains of interest, to make you multifaceted and diversely.
Yes, and keep your brain all the time busy reading, not only scrolling down and watching videos from YouTube or Instagram and TikTok, happy moments or silly things. It's good to train yourself reading, even things that might not be in the same field or contracting opinions contracted between them. Is useful, and it's only for good, full stop. That's the best advice that I also want to share with the listeners and viewers.
Paper or digital? What's your
paper? Yes,
we love the paper.
Yes, I'm traditional.
Marino, thank you very much for coming. I really enjoyed the conversation. As you saw, there are so many different thematics we could take it. I wanted to touch on some of the aspects that make up Marinos Kleanthous. Keep up the great work, and thank you again for coming to the show.
Filippos, thank you so much for the invitation. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marina.
Is this another game of my mind? I'm wide awake. I hear my name. I turn around. There's no one again. I won't forget the day she left. Slam the door and never